and there should be no attempt to draw distinctions of reality between them. At the last, they are all but the mechanism of consciousness, or awareness, each adapted to the peculiar requirements of its environment. The astral has its scenery, geography, and things, just as has the material world. These things are just as real as are England, the Vatican, St. Paul's, the Capitol at Washington, Broadway, Piccadilly, or the Rue de la Paix, the great redwood trees of California, the Grand Canyon, the Alps, or the Black Forest. Its inhabitants are just as real as any of the great men of the country in which you live, or those of any other country, whose names I hesitate to call, lest they pass from this material plane and thus become unreal even before these printed words pass before your eye, so impermanent are the inhabitants and things of even this real material world. The law of constant change operates on the astral just as on the material plane. There, things come and go, just as they do here on the material plane. Stop a moment and concentrate on the gist of the matter, and you will see that the difference between the things of the two planes is simply like the difference between red and blue, simply a difference in the rate of vibration of substance. And this again is the cause of the difference between steel and hydrogen gas, between electricity and light, between magnetism and heat, simply a difference of vibrations of substance. Moreover, and this is quite important to the student, the astral has its laws just as has the material world. These laws must be learned and observed, otherwise the inhabitants of the astral, as well as the visitor thereto, will reap the result which always comes from broken natural laws. Again, there exists what may be called the geography of the astral, if this material plane word is permitted in this connection. There are regions, points of space, places, kingdoms, countries, etc., on the astral, just as on the material plane. Sometimes these astral regions have no connection with any on the material plane, while in other cases they have a very direct connection with and relation to material places and the inhabitants thereof. One may travel from one region of the astral to another, by simply an act of will which raises the vibration of the astral body, without it moving a point in space. Again, one may travel in space from one point to another, on the astral, in cases where these points have some relation to points on the material plane. As an instance of this latter form of travel, I would say that one may travel in the astral from Berlin to Bombay in but the twinkle of an eye, as regards time, by merely wishing or willing to do so. Yes. Time and space have their manifestation on the astral. But, nevertheless, certain astral manifestations, on its 7x7 subplanes, may be, and likely are, present therein, at, and on, the exact point of space which you are occupying at this moment on the material plane and this very moment of time, now. If you have the knowledge and power, you, without leaving your seat, may traverse all of these subplanes, one after the other, witnessing their scenery and inhabitants, their phenomena and activity, and then return to the material plane all in a moment of time, and without changing a single point in space. Or, if you prefer, you may travel to any of these subplanes of the astral, at your point of space, and then travel in space on the astral to some other place on that subplane, and then have the choice of returning either the same way by which you came, or else descending to the material plane and traveling on it, in your astral body, back to where your physical body is resting. Read over these last two paragraphs, until you get the idea clearly fixed in your mind, for by so doing you will be able to comprehend more easily that which I shall have to say to you in the following chapters of this book. In traveling on the astral, one meets with many strange inhabitants of that wonderful realm of nature, some pleasant and others unpleasant. Some of these inhabitants have passed on from the material plane, while others have never dwelt there, these latter forms being natives of the astral and peculiar to itself. In my personal class instruction, I have found it advantageous to my students for me to describe the phenomena of the astral to them in my lectures, in the form of the story of a trip in the astral, rather than as a dry, technical description. In such lectures, I assume that the students are present on the astral with me, and that I am acting as their guide. In this way, a much clearer conception of the subject seems to be gained by them. After careful consideration, I have decided to follow this same plan in part, at least in some of the following chapters. I need scarcely add that the descriptions given are based upon the actual experiences of advanced occultists, including myself, and are not dogmatic statements of theory, conjectures, or speculations of mere book occultists. Every fact herein stated may be verified by the experience of any advanced occultist. Chapter 4. Passing the Border. I do not deem it advisable to enter into a description of the technical details attendant upon the process of passing out of the physical body into the astral body of finer substance. Any description of this kind, even though it be but merely a suggestion of the facts, might give an untrained person at least a hint of the process, which might lead him to experiment, and which might bring upon him very undesirable results. I shall pass over this stage, for the reasons stated, which will meet with the approval of every advanced occultist and careful student of occultism. Now, student, you find yourself outside of your physical form or body, and clad in your astral form alone. You probably think that I am joking with you, for as you glance at your body you find that it appears not different from your ordinary one. Even your clothing is the same, to the most minute detail. This occurs through perfectly natural laws on the astral plane, which I cannot take time to explain at this time. You realize, however, that you are indeed out of the physical body, when you turn your head and perceive your own physical form, as well as mine, seemingly sunk in sleep in the armchairs in which we seated ourselves a few moments ago. Looking a little closer, you will see that your astral form, as well as mine, is connected with its physical counterpart by a tiny, thin, tenuous filament of ethereal substance, resembling a rope of shining spiderweb silk. This filament is capable of expansion and contraction, and enables you to move about freely. Now concentrate your attention as you have been taught to do, and will that your vibrations increase in rate, but in perfect harmony with mine, so that you will keep in my company instead of moving on to other sub-planes or sub-visions, parting with my company. You would not find it exactly safe or pleasant to leave my presence, until you have learned to pilot yourself in these strange waters. You will find yourself with me in a strange atmosphere, although you have not moved an inch in space. Behind you, so to speak, you perceive dimly the room in which we were just living, and ahead of you, so to speak, you perceive strange flashes and streaks of phosphorescent light of different hues and tints. These are the vibrations and waves of force, for you are now passing through the plane of forces. That vivid, bluish streak is the passage of some electric current, probably a wireless message flashing through space. Back of you, on my table, you see the magnetic or lodestone, paperweight, which always lies there. But now you see the peculiar phosphorescence around its poles, which is not visible on the material plane. You also notice a peculiar faint vibratory glow around every physical object. This is the force of atomic and molecular attraction, etc. Still fainter, you find a peculiar radiance permeating the entire atmosphere. This is the outward sign of the force of gravitation. These things are all very interesting, and if you were a learned physicist, or great physical scientist, you could scarcely be dragged from this plane. So interesting would be the study of force made visible. But, as you are not such a person, you will see more interesting sights ahead of you. Now, you feel your life force vibrating at a higher rate, and realize that the sense of weight seems to be dropping from you. You feel as light as a feather, and feel as though you could move without an effort. Well, you may begin to walk. Yes, walk, I said. You are still on Earth, and the floor of the room is still there under your feet. Let us walk through the wall of the room, and out into the street. Don't be afraid, step through the wall as if it were made of fog. There, you see how easy it is. Odd thing, really stepping through a brick and stone wall, isn't it? But it's still more odd when you stop to consider that as we moved, the wall really passed through our thin substance, instead of the latter passing through the wall. That's the real secret of it. Now let us walk down the street. Step out just as if you were in the flesh. Stop a moment. The you let that man walk right through you. And he never even saw you. Do you realize that we are ghosts? Just as much a ghost as was Hamlet's father, except that his physical body was mouldering in the ground, while ours are asleep awaiting our return to them. There. That dog saw you. And that horse vaguely feels your presence. See how nervous he is. Animals possess very keen psychic senses, compared to those of man. But cease thinking of yourself, and look closely at the persons passing by you. You notice that each one is surrounded by an egg-shaped aura extending on all sides of him to the distance of about 2 or 3 feet. Do you notice the kaleidoscopic play of blending colors in the aura? Notice the difference in the shades and tints of these colors, and also observe the predominance of special colors in each case. You know what these colors mean, for I have instructed you regarding them in my teaching on the human aura, and astral colors. Notice that beautiful spiritual blue around that woman's head. And see that ugly muddy red around that man passing her. Here comes an intellectual giant. See that beautiful golden yellow around his head, like a nimbus. But I don't exactly like that shade of red around his body, and there is too marked an absence of blue in his aura. He lacks harmonious development. Do you notice those great clouds of semi-luminous substance, which are slowly floating along? Notice how the colors vary in them. Those are clouds of thought vibrations, representing the composite thought of a multitude of people. Also notice how each body of thought is drawing to itself little fragments of similar thought forms and energy. You see here the tendency of thought forces to attract others of their kind, how like the proverbial birds of a feather, they flock together, how thoughts come home, bringing their friends with them, how each man creates his own thought atmosphere. Speaking of atmospheres, do you notice that each shop we pass has its own peculiar thought atmosphere? If you look into the houses on either side of the street, you will see that the same thing is true. The very street itself has its own atmosphere, created by the composite thought of those inhabiting and frequenting it. No. Do not pass down that side street. Its astral atmosphere is too depressing, and its colors too horrible and disgusting for you to witness just now. You might get discouraged and fly back to your physical body for relief. Look at those thought forms flying through the atmosphere. What a variety of form and coloring. Some most beautiful, the majority quite neutral in tint, and occasionally a fierce, fiery one tearing its way along toward its mark. Observe those whirling and swirling tiny cyclonic thought forms as they are thrown off from that business house. Across the street, notice that great octopus monster of a thought form, with its great tentacles striving to wind around passing persons and draw them into that flashy dance hall and drum shop. A devilish monster which we would do well to destroy. Turn your concentrated thought upon it, and will it out of existence there. That's the right way. Watch it sicken and shrivel. But alas! More of its kind will come forth from that place. Here, will yourself up above the level of the housetops. You can do it easily, if you only realize that you can there. I have helped you to do it this time. It's quite easy when you once gain confidence. However, if you lose confidence, and grow afraid, down you will tumble to the ground, and will bruise your astral body. From this height look down around you. You will see a great multitude of tiny candle-like lights, each represents a human soul. Here or there you will see a few much brighter lights, and far apart you will see some that shine like a brilliant electric spark. These last are the auric symbols of an advanced soul. Let your light so shine. Behold the radiance emerging from that humble house of religious worship, and contrast it with the unpleasant auric atmosphere of that magnificent church structure next door to it. Can you not read the story of spirituality and the lack of it in the cases of these churches? But these sites, interesting though they be, and as useful as they are in illustrating the lessons you have learned in the class, or from the manual, are far less in the scale than those which we shall witness in a moment. Come, Take my hand. Our vibrations are raising. Come. Chapter 5. Some lower subplanes. Now, student, we are entering the Vaihi vibrations of the lower subplanes of the astral. You must nerve yourself to witness some unpleasant sights, but be not afraid, for nothing can harm you here while I am with you. Were you alone here, lacking the knowledge of self-protection, you might find the experience very terrifying. But, even then, though you lacked the higher knowledge, if you would but maintain a positive mental state, and deny the power of the astral inhabitants to harm you, you would still be safe. A firm mental attitude, and the assertion of your own immunity will act as a barrier through which these influences cannot penetrate. Your first impression is that the material world is still around you, with all its scenes plainly visible. But, as you look, you will find that there seems to be a peculiar veil between those scenes and the plane upon which you are temporarily dwelling. This veil, while at least semi-transparent, nevertheless seems to have a peculiar appearance of resistant solidity, and you find yourself instinctively realizing that it would be a barrier to the passage of the astral entities back to the material plane. I now change our vibrations, for a moment, to those of a very unpleasant subdivision of the lowest subplane. This is the subdivision which the old occultists were wont to call the astral cemetery. We shall stay on this plane of vibrations but for a moment, for it furnishes a ghastly sight, and its atmosphere is most depressing. Now, hold tight to me, and press close up to me, for you will instinctively feel the need of protection. Gazing around you on all sides, you will see what appear to be the disintegrating forms of human beings, and even some animals. These forms seem to be floating in space. They seem real, and yet, some way, not real. You realize that they are not physical bodies, but still they bear too close a resemblance to physical corpses to be pleasant. Take one good look around you, for I shall change our vibrations in a moment. There, we have left that scene behind us. But before proceeding further, we shall pause a moment and consider what we have just witnessed. These disintegrating astral forms are what occultists know as the astral shells. Their astral shell is really an astral corpse, just as the physical body in the grave is the material corpse. For, as we shall presently see, the disembodied soul eventually leaves the astral and moves on to what the occultists know as the mental or spiritual planes of being, which are symbolized by the race conception of the heavens, of which all religions teach. When the soul so passes on, it leaves behind it the astral body it has inhabited while on the astral. This astral body, or form, then begins to disintegrate, and in time disappears altogether, being resolved to its original elements. During this process, it dwells on this particular division of one of the lower subdivisions of the lowest astral subplane. This particular division has no other purpose, and is separate and apart from the other subdivisions. There is a great difference between the astral shells of different individuals, so far as is concerned the duration of the shells in this particular place of disintegration. For instance, the astral of a person of high spirituality and ideals will disintegrate very rapidly indeed, as its atoms have little or no cohesive attraction when once it is discarded. But, on the other hand, the astral shell of a person of earthly ideals and material tendencies will hold together for a comparatively long time, so strong is the attractive force generated while the shell is occupied by its owner. Those astral bodies are dead and have no consciousness or intelligence, and as a rule cannot even be galvanized into appearing alive as can the class of astral forms known as the specters, or shades, which belong to a slightly different category, and which we shall now glance at for a moment. There, gaze on the scene for a moment, before I change the vibrations again. Our momentary glimpse of the subdivision of the astral upon which the spectral forms abide, was not a pleasant one, but it is interesting because it explains some peculiar features of psychic or occult phenomena which is often misinterpreted. You noticed that instead of floating about in astral space, as did the shells which we saw a few moments back, these specters acted like shadowy human beings in a dazed or dreamlike condition. You saw them walking dreamily about, without set object or purpose, a weird, unpleasant sight. These specters are really astral shells from which the souls have departed, but which have left in them sufficient power, arising from the former thought and will vibrations of their, 40, owners, to give them a temporary semblance of life and action. This power gradually wears away, and the shell then sinks to the subdivision which we saw a little further back. In the meantime, it dwells on this particular subdivision. In the case of the soul with high ideals and spiritual aspirations, there are practically no material thought vibrations remaining to galvanize the astral body after the soul has withdrawn itself. Its higher nature has neutralized these lower, but strong, vibrations. But in the case of the soul retaining strong material thoughts and desires, the power is much stronger. In the latter class, even after the higher nature of the soul has drawn it upward, above the astral, these lower mental vibrations may persist in the deserted astral form, and thus give to the latter a semblance of life and activity which, though a counterfeit, may manifest considerable power for a time. The counterfeit power of these spectral forms steadily decreases, but in some cases it persists for a comparatively long time. As a rule, the power disappears in the way stated, but in certain other cases it is used up, as a spark is rendered bright by blowing upon it, by means of a psychic stimulus from persons living on the material plane. I am now alluding to the power generated in circles, and through mediumistic persons, on the material plane or earth life. The psychic power so generated, coupled with the strong mental attraction set up between persons in earth life and the spectral form, may cause the latter to manifest itself to the former, either by more or less complete materialization, or by partial manifestation through the physical organism of the medium, or mediums, present. In such a case, the specter, reanimated and galvanized into seeming life by means of the psychic power of the medium, or those composing the psychic circle, will strive to manifest itself by speech, automatic writing, raps, or otherwise. But, at the best, its efforts will be feeble and faulty, and the persons witnessing the phenomena will always remember the same with the dim idea that there was something wrong about it, something was found to be lacking. In some cases, the vibration of old memories will survive in the spectral form, which will enable it to answer questions fairly well, and to allude to past experiences. But even then, in these cases there will be a shadow of unreality which will impress the careful observer. 42. Remember, there are many other forms of spirit return, partial or complete, but much that passes for the real phenomena is really but a manifestation of the presence of these spectral forms of whose real nature we have been made acquainted by our glimpse into their region of abode. Moreover, these entities, if they may be called by that name, borrow ideas and impressions from the minds of the mediums or persons in the circle, in addition to their own shadowy memories, and thus doubly become reflections or counterfeits. These specters have really no soul. The soul which formerly occupied the form has departed to a higher plane, and is in ignorance of the performance of its discarded shell. It is pathetic to witness cases where these counterfeit spectral form are accepted as the departed soul of the individual, by those who loved him in earth life. A lack of knowledge of true occultism often permits of deplorable mistakes of this kind. The true occultist is never deceived in this manner. These specters are no more departed souls or spirits than a galvanized physical corpse is the individual which once inhabited it, though the current may cause it to move its muscles and go through the motions of life. It remains a corpse and discarded shell, and that is just what the spectral form is, plus the remaining vibratory echoes of its old mental life. Headline, Chapter 6. Disembodied Souls. You very naturally inquire, but where are the disembodied souls, themselves? I expected to see them as soon as we crossed the border of the astral. Yes. That is the general expectation of the neophyte in occultism, when he gets his first glimpse into the astral scenes. But, unless he happens to stumble at once upon certain subplanes, he is apartment to be disappointed. But, the better way is to let you learn the story by viewing the various subplanes, at the same time listening to my explanation of that which you witness on them. You will notice that our vibrations are now changing, and growing more intense. We are now entering upon a very wonderful sub-plane, or rather, upon one of the subdivisions of such a plane. This region, I ask you to remember, is one the entry to which is strictly guarded by the law of the astral, and watched over by certain very high spiritual influences. It is a sacred place. No one is admitted here as a visitor, unless he be of high spirituality and pure heart. Even a trained occultist, unless he possess these qualifications, finds it impossible to enter these vibrations. This region is the resting place of the disembodied souls for some time after they have left the physical body. In it they dwell in peaceful slumber, until nature performs certain work in preparing them for their new plane of life. This stage has been compared to the cocoon stage, between the stage of the caterpillar and that of the butterfly, in which stage a complete transformation is effected, and the wings of the new life are developed to take the place of the old crawling form. We are now on this particular sub-plane. Enter upon a contemplation of its wonders, with all reverence and love of all mankind. On all sides, stretching away as far as the eye can see, you perceive the slumbering forms of disembodied souls, each astral form resting in dreamless sleep. And, yet, even if you were not so informed, you would recognize that these forms are not dead, but are merely sleeping. There is none of the atmosphere of death or corpses about this region. Nothing depressing, you notice. Nothing but a sense of infinite calm and peace. Being spiritually developed yourself, you doubtless feel the presence of certain great spiritual entities, though you see them not, because their vibrations are too high for you to see them even by astral vision. These are the great spiritual guardians of this realm, who protect the slumber of the souls at rest here in the great watches of the sleeping souls. If you will watch carefully, you will notice here and there a movement indicating the awakening of some of these resting forms. A moment later the form disappears from the scene, it seemingly melts into nothingness. But it still is existent, its vibrations simply have changed, and it has moved on to another subplane, or division thereof, without having been aware of the scenes of this place. It has begun its real life after death. Let us move on, leaving this scene behind us, while I explain to you some of the phenomena of this period of existence of the disembodied soul. Let us pause here, on the quiet subplane, until the matter is made plain to you. It is a common teaching of many religions that the disembodied soul enters at once upon its heaven or hell. The Roman Catholic Church, and some branches of Buddhism, however, teach of an intermediate state called purgatory, or a similar name. Some denominations of the Christian Church hold that all souls slumber in unconsciousness, until the call of the great trumpet of judgment day, when all awaken from their long sleep and are judged and sent to the place of reward or punishment, as their cases may deserve. You see on the astral some things which show you that all of these views have a basis in fact, and yet how imperfect are these conceptions of the theologies. All occultists know, however, that nearly all of the original religious teachers had a very complete knowledge of the real facts of the astral and higher planes, and merely handed down to their followers such fragments of the truth as they thought could be assimilated at the time. All of the theological teachings regarding the life after death, heavens and hells contain some truth, but none contain all the truth. In the majority of cases, the mind of the dying person sinks into the slumber of so-called death, and awakens only after a period of restful, transforming slumber upon the astral, in the region we have just seen. In some cases, however, there is a brief waking, like a semi-awakening from a dream, shortly after the departure from the physical body, in which case the astral body may appear, visibly, to some friend, associate or loved one, or even in the scenes in which the person usually spent much of his time, as, for instance, his office, shop, study, etc. This accounts for the occasional instances of the disembodied person so appearing, of which there are many well authenticated cases. But even in such event, the disembodied soul soon becomes drowsy, and sinks into the preliminary sleep of the astral, Moving on to the region we have just left, there is a great difference in the time in which the disembodied soul slumbers in this state. Strange and paradoxical as it may appear, the highest and lowest souls in the scale of development awaken first,